situation in Gaza is rapidly approaching a humanitarian disaster, calling for the protection of civilians. Hello everyone from the studios in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. Day 38 of the Israeli war on Gaza, where relentless airstrikes continue to hit civilian areas, including houses, schools and even hospitals. The latest Israeli air attacks took the lives of 32 Palestinians. The strikes hit two houses, one in the southern city of Khan Yunis and another in the Jabalia refugee camp in the northern Gaza Strip. Also in the north, a UN-run school was struck in the city of Beit Lahia. The Israeli regime also bombed several hospitals where people had taken shelter. Palestinians say the regime is targeting everywhere in the blockaded territory.
I fled from one hospital to another. I thought hospitals were safe, but nowhere is safe. We are staying on the street. There's no shelter for me and my children to sleep at night. I thought hospitals were safe, but they are not. Hospitals are being bombed.
We have been displaced to this school as a safe place, according to the Israeli army commands. But unfortunately, even at UNRWA shelters, we can't find safety after retreating from northern Gaza Strip.
The total death toll in Gaza has passed 11,100. Over 8,000 of them are women and children. Hundreds of people are also missing under the rubble of bombed-out buildings. Meanwhile, the Israeli regime is pressing ahead with its ground operation as well. Heavy fighting has been reported around Gaza City. The Quds Brigades of the Islamic Jihad Resistance Movement says they have targeted the Israeli troops and vehicles south of the city. The regime says 18 of its soldiers have been killed in the ground invasion that began 2 weeks ago. Nothing is probably more synonymous with war crimes than targeting hospitals and killing war-stricken people taking shelter there. And that's what's happening in the Gaza Strip, where the healthcare system is deteriorating rapidly, with more and more hospitals becoming dysfunctional. The Israeli military has encircled Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City while bombing it repeatedly over the past several days. According to reports, Israeli snipers continue to fire at anyone near the medical facility. The World Health Organization has described the situation of the hospital as dire and perilous. The hospital's last generator has also run out of fuel, which has led to the death of 5 premature babies and 7 critical patients. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas denies claims that it refused the Israeli fuel offer to Al-Shifa Hospital. The director of the medical facility also called the Israeli claim a propaganda stunt. According to the UN, 20 of Gaza's 36 hospitals are no longer functioning. There seems to be no let-up in the Israeli regime's relentless strikes on civilians in the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, hospitals and medical centers remain the prime target of Israeli attacks, with the situation on the ground getting extremely desperate.
With the Israeli strikes continuing for the 36th straight day, over 5,000 wounded and more than 2,400 martyrs have been taken to Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital so far. Most of them were children, women, and the elderly. But this is the only hospital in central Gaza and cannot admit many wounded people. At the moment, the hospital is overstretched and there is no room for more injured patients. Currently, the wounded are accommodated outside in the yard of the hospital. Moreover, the hospital is facing a shortage of medical equipment and fuel. We are facing a crisis. The health system has been shattered and medical staff keep working in all hospitals under harrowing conditions. Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza is besieged by the occupying forces and our medical personnel are not able to leave or enter the premise. Patients cannot be transferred to this hospital either, and martyrs are buried in mass graves. As the hospital is under siege, it has got out of control and is gradually becoming unable to offer any services. If the siege continues, all the wounded in this hospital will turn into lifeless bodies. The infants ward, in particular, is is facing a shortage of medicines and special formula used to feed premature babies. At the moment, at least 21 hospitals and over 4 dozen medical centers are no longer able to offer services. We are facing a catastrophe at hospitals in the Gaza Strip, and our medical staff are discharging their responsibilities without having any security, so much so that over 200 medical personnel have been murdered and over 400 wounded. Our fuel is running out, and if this happens, our generators will shut down and all hospitals will turn into mass graves for patients.
Several UN bodies have urged immediate international action to stop Israeli strikes on hospitals in the Gaza Strip. The call was issued by the regional directors of the United Nations Children's Fund, the World Health Organization, and the UN Population Fund. They voiced grave concern over the latest reports of attacks on hospitals, namely Al-Rantisi Children's Hospital, Al-Shifa and Al-Quds hospitals, as well as areas in their immediate vicinity. The three UN bodies added that Israeli strikes have killed many civilians, including children, and prevented safe access to hospitals for health staff, the wounded, and other patients. They explained that premature and newborn babies on life support are dying due to power, oxygen, and water cuts at Al-Shifa Hospital, while others remain at risk. The International Committee of the Red Cross warns the situation in Gaza is rapidly approaching a humanitarian disaster, calling for the protection of civilians. The ICRC says an unbearable human tragedy is unfolding as Israeli attacks are targeting densely populated areas in the besieged territory. It also voiced concern over the precarious and unsafe evacuation of civilians from the north. The ICRC said thousands of displaced Palestinians do not have access to basic needs, including water, food and shelter. It's also underlined that the volume of humanitarian aid coming into the Strip is inadequate. A senior member of Palestine's Hamas resistance movement has described as deplorable the Israeli attacks on hospitals in Gaza. Osama Hamdan has said Hamas will pay, in his words, the Nazi leaders of the occupying regime back for that crime. Hamdan criticized the international community for doing nothing in response to Israel's airstrike on Al-Ahli Arab Hospital last month. He said the failure to try Israel over that crime emboldened the regime to target more hospitals and commit further bloodshed. The Hamas official said Israel continues to kill Palestinians to make up for the defeat it faced on October the 7th. Hamdan also rejected Israeli claims that Gaza's largest hospital, Al-Shifa, is a military target. He meanwhile called for more efforts by Arab countries to help stop the U.S.-backed war.
We expect our Arab and Muslim brothers to use all their strength from political and economic power to pressure Washington to stop the aggression against civilians and children immediately, which every day results in 400 more martyrs and about 1,000 more innocent children and women injured.
Craig Murray is a former British diplomat who was sacked by the Foreign Office in 2003 for criticizing the country's human rights record. And just this week, he was briefly detained for expressing support for the resistance movements Hamas and Hezbollah. Palestine Declassified Program has talked to Murray. He elaborates on the UK's role in Israel's genocide of Gazans.
I think Britain's primary role, as usual, is being a kind of useful henchman and accomplice to the United States in reinforcing United States diplomacy. You'll find not a cigarette paper of difference between what the UK has said and what the US has said in the diplomatic world. But the UK also has offered military support, as we heard in the report, you know, there are reasons to suspect that the SAS is involved in the Gaza Strip, and Britain is also assisting with communications intelligence intercepts. Israel is a implanted colonial settlement, which effectively is an outreach project of the United States, part of its power projection into a hydrocarbon-rich area. The United States subsidizes Israel to a tune of $4 billion a year and, of course, provides a great bulk of its military hardware.
People around the world continue to hit the streets to show solidarity with the Palestinians and demand an end to the Israeli bloodshed in the Gaza Strip. Hundreds of people attended a rally in Australia's biggest city of Sydney. They denounced Israel's actions in Gaza, waved Palestinian flags and claimed slogans or chanted slogans such as "Palestine will never die." Spaniards packed an underground station in Barcelona demanding Israel halt its military action in the Palestinian territory. In Ireland's capital, Dublin, protesters urged their government to expel the Israeli ambassador. South Africans held a new rally in Cape Town. They also demanded the expulsion of Israel's envoy and the closure of his embassy. Similar rallies were also held in the capitals of France, Germany, Belgium and Britain, where people condemned Israel's brutal attacks on Gaza. In London, over 300,000 people marched towards the US embassy, calling for an end to the war on Gaza.
After 5 weeks of shocking war crimes, official Western pressure is finally mounting on Tel Aviv. French President Emmanuel Macron admitted in an interview that Israel's actions have, quote, no legitimacy. He added, quote, these babies, these ladies, these old people are bombed and killed, so there is no reason for that. So we do urge Israel to stop. Citizen pressure on Tel Aviv continues with marches worldwide, with over 10,000 marching across Paris.
Macron has to finally extend actual support to the Palestinians and force Israel to accept a ceasefire. This is an attempt at genocide, and there are children dying every day.
The deliberate targeting of civilians has left over 11,000 Palestinians murdered, which is more dead civilians in 1 month than in over 1.5 years of Russia's special military operation in Ukraine. Many say that Israel's 75-year-long brutality, repression, and human rights violations are out in the open like never before, and that things will never be the same.
Global opinion has changed because all these videos on Twitter and Instagram make it crystal clear who the aggressor is. And the double standard with Ukraine is also obvious. The French government constantly cried that this was a scandal, but then they remained silent as Gazans die day and night.
Israel has increased their bombing and murder in Lebanon, further sparking the possibility of a major multinational war.
As Lebanese, firstly, we're concerned by the crisis that's happening in Gaza, because Lebanon was previously occupied by Israel in 1982. Beirut was the second Arab capital occupied by Israel. And so we've had the bitter taste of occupation before by the Israelis. Currently, south of Lebanon is under attack by Israel. This conflict can turn into a regional conflict with Hezbollah getting involved, Israel instigating Lebanese parties, the Syrians, the Iranians, the Yemenis into this conflict.
This week, at the first Western-hosted summit on Palestine, Macron said the clear conclusion was that, quote, there is no other solution than a humanitarian pause and then going on to a ceasefire, end quote. Marchers here hope that Washington and Tel Aviv listen to the sound of the global chorus. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
The organizers said it was going to be big, and they were right. Hundreds of thousands of people showing solidarity with Palestine and united in one thing.
A ceasefire. Stop the genocide, because that's what's happening. We can all see it.
We need to speak up. The world needs to wake up and speak up. This is not okay. This is genocide, and not in our name. That's why we're here today. Not in our name.
It's the biggest march since the Israeli onslaught on Gaza commenced, with hundreds of thousands of people walking hours to the American embassy in London to condemn U.S. support for the Israeli regime.
The Americans support Palestine. The American government does not. Right now in America, they are shutting down an arm factory, they are protesting outside, they are marching in their thousands. The American people do not support genocide. Joe Biden and his government does.
The protest was organized by Palestinian support groups, Muslim organizations and peace movements. People of all faiths and no faith, some all the way from Northern Ireland, angry with decades of Israel's brutal military occupation in the occupied territories.
We've all recently seen the recent events of the genocide of the Palestinian people. But that didn't start 4 weeks ago. That has been going on since 1947, the genocide and the extermination and the occupying of Palestine.
Anger at the British government, too, for cracking down on these demonstrations describing them as hate marches and pro-Palestine mobs.
In the run-up to today's march, the UK's right-wing interior minister, Sueli Braverman, tried to get the police to cancel it because it coincides with Armistice Day, commemorating the end of the First World War, a move campaigners and organizers have described as a crackdown on freedom of speech.
Previously, she asked police to make a call on whether even waving a Palestinian flag constituted a racially aggravated offense. Today, as in previous rallies, a forest of Palestinian flags.
It's a calculated attempt to stir up population against the pro-Palestine movement. I think it is misjudged completely because a huge number of people in Britain defend Palestine's rights and they are opposed to the invasion. And Braverman isn't speaking to the general population. She's talking to the right wing that she needs to support her. That's all it is.
More than anything, today's march, which harks back to the mass demonstration before the 2003 US-led illegal invasion of Iraq, is aimed at pushing the British state, which during the First World War publicly promised a national home for the Jewish people in its controversial 1917 Balfour Declaration, to pressure Israel to cease its brutal shelling of Gaza. Saeed Pourreza, London.
Those were the top stories. Thank you for listening. Take care for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Gaza suffers the most airstrikes in a month in West Asia region since 2020. Nurada says bombardment of the enclave is unprecedented, with swathes of territory reduced to rubble. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East iWrote, the Gaza Strip has experienced the highest number of airstrikes recorded within a single month for any country or territory in the West Asia region, going back to 2020, according to a data analytics from tracking the Zionist regime's assault. The Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project, ACLED, said in a post on the social media platform X, "The scale of Israel's air campaign in Gaza is unprecedented." ACLED recorded more than 600 airstrike events across more than 50 locations in Gaza in October alone, the group said. Despite Gaza's small size of just 360 square kilometers, this represents the highest number of airstrike events recorded within a single month for any country or territory in the Middle East since 2020. The relentless Israeli regime bombing campaign has flattened entire neighborhoods and targeted civilian infrastructure, hospitals, mosques, churches, and schools, sheltering thousands of displaced people. The update from ACLED is just the latest statistic to capture the unprecedented bloodshed being experienced by Palestinians living in the Gaza Strip. According to the Palestinian Health Ministry, on average, a Palestinian child was killed every 10 minutes over the past month. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has repeatedly called for an immediate ceasefire and warned that the Gaza Strip was becoming a graveyard for children. Recently, the Israeli regime military killed dozens of civilians in central Gaza's Deir al-Balah in what the Palestinian Health Ministry described as a new massacre. The Zionist regime's war minister Yoav Gallant said recently that Israel was tightening the stranglehold around Gaza City as he refused to rule out Israel invading the city's Al-Shifa hospital, claiming that it housed a Hamas command center. Hamas has denied those allegations. Other medical facilities have also pushed back against similar Israeli claims. Indonesia also denied that its hospital built with charitable funds in the Gaza Strip was constructed atop a network of Hamas tunnels. Al Jazeera English also noted, in late October, the international nonprofit Save the Children reported that the number of children killed in the Gaza Strip over 3 weeks of the Zionist regime's bombardment had surpassed the annual number of children killed in global conflict zones every year since 2019. Since then, the number of tiny bodies wrapped in white shrouds and surrounded by grieving family members has only grown, as the Zionist regime has also launched a ground offensive, adding artillery fire to the destruction unleashed by its missiles. Yet, as the war rages on, a month after it started, even the numbers don't fully reveal the scale at which Gaza's children have been killed. According to new figures, Israel's attacks have killed 4,104 children in Gaza during the current war, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs reports. These deaths have been reported over 1 month of violence. That's comfortably more than 100 children killed every day on average. Gaza has a population of 2.3 million people living in an area of 365 square kilometers, which amounts to a population density of 6,300 people per square kilometer. And also, children make up 47% of Gaza's population, according to UNICEF. Anadolu News Agency also reported the Palestine Red Crescent Society warned recently that fuel reserves at Al-Quds Hospital in Gaza City will run out in 48 hours as the Zionist regime has been barring the entry of fuel into Gaza since October 7th. In a statement recently, it said that once the fuel runs out, vital equipment at the hospital will shut down, including resuscitation equipment, baby incubators, and intensive care units. It added that the hospital is already suffering from a severe lack of medicines and food and water for its medical staff, patients, and displaced people. The statement noted that over 14,000 displaced Palestinians have been sheltering at the hospital for more than 3 weeks. It said the Israeli regime army is still denying the entry of basic materials, including fuel, for the hospital and its ambulance service.
Food for thought.
Hello, everyone.
Let us contemplate on a short but sweet saying from the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib. Peace be upon him. The tongue is a wild beast. When it's let loose, it devours.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, humility and arrogance. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Who doesn't wish to be exalted in the eyes of Allah? Who doesn't wish to be exalted in the eyes of the Holy Prophet? Who doesn't wish to be exalted in the eyes of Ahlul Bayt and the angels of Allah? But the question is, how can we do that? Everybody wants it for them, but how is it possible? How do we make it happen? Well, let's turn towards Imam Ali alayhi salam, who is always there to guide us. The holy, infallible Imam says, humility exalts you and arrogance makes you despised. He gives us the key formula here. Humility elevates your ranks in the eyes of the awliya of Allah, the friends of Allah, the righteous servants of Allah. This is how you increase your level. This is how you exalt yourself, right? Humility is an ornament of a believer. The righteous servants of all were all humble. Look at the prophets and imams, for example. Read their seerah and the way of living. Look at their lifestyles. They all lived simple and humble lives, right? It wouldn't make a difference in their lifestyles whether they possessed wealth or not, and whether their wealth was a lot or less. But in today's society, unfortunately, we see that as people make wealth and as they become rich, the element and the factor of being humble continues to reduce. And instead, what takes place is what we call as arrogance, which is the greatest vice in Islam. So brothers and sisters, be humble, not arrogant.
Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing humility and arrogance. Humility being a virtue in Islam and arrogance being a vice. Imam Ali alayhi salam said, "Beware of having arrogance because it is the greatest sin and the basest deficiency. It is also the ornament of Satan." Look how strong words Imam Ali alayhi salam used. Ornament of Satan. Yani, Satan beautifies himself through your arrogance. You end up being a source of beautification of Satan, right? And similarly, you know, it being a greatest sin, in the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam, you know, it should mean a lot to us. And also Imam is saying that this is, you know, some very serious level of deficiency a person has, which compels him to be arrogant. You know, he's hiding some sort of deficiency in him. Imam Ali alayhi salam also says, humility exalts you and arrogance makes you despised. So people start respecting you. You have this, you know, exalted level in the society if you are being humble. But if you are arrogant, on the other hand, you see that, you know, people start to repel you and being away from you. Imam Ali alayhi salam advised a governor general he had appointed to rule Egypt as being humble to people. Meet them gently and receive them with a cheerful face. Very clear instructions. Look at the governors and government officials of today's materialistic world. They're so arrogant. You see it on their face. You see it in their walk. You see it in their talk. You know, what is this arrogance all about? And look, the standards of Islam that Imam Ali alayhi salam is setting. In most cases, most of these worldly governors and government officials, if not all of them, are the most arrogant of people. Isn't that right? So this is how far we are from the standards of Islam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Population density rate in the Gaza Strip. Part 2.
This area is called Al Zaytun neighborhood, and the Al Dadus are its biggest families. Before 1987, you could hardly see a building here. It was all farms. This urban sprawl threatens the farms. Our ancestors left hundreds of dunams of lands. Now a person has just 5 or 4 dunams. I have 23 sons and grandchildren. 5 of them are married. After 10 years, I think they will be 50. Our people love reproduction and feel proud of their children. My brother Abu Fadi was the first martyr of the Al Dadu family. He got married very young and had 3 sons and a daughter. If he did not get married, he would not have left children after being killed. This is my brother-in-law, Aid al-Sawafiri, Abu Sajid. He inherited a farm here, but when he removed the trees, we felt pain. The trees were planted by my father and grandfathers, but he had to build a house and live in it instead of living in his rented apartment. He lived in this house for 4 years before it was completed. This was due to his hard economic situation. I live with my wife and 4 children in a rented house. I have 3 sons and a daughter. The house is humble and cannot suit my family in the near future. When my children grow up, they will each need a room. Gaza people love to have big families with many children. They support the father in the future. This is our nature. We saw our fathers and grandfathers trying to increase the members of their families, and so do we.
Worth mentioning, the Palestinian society in general and the society in Gaza in particular recognize that the rapid increase in their population passed the international standards of population density rate, though they rationalize it in terms of compensating the number of the civilians killed by the Israeli occupation army throughout the last decades.
If a family has 10 children, 3 or 4 of them may be killed by an Israeli invasion. So there will be children to survive and achieve the dream of returning to the homeland with their father or after his death. I never returned. My children may return in the future. You can hardly find a family that does not have a martyr, an injured person, or a prisoner among its members. Therefore, we think that every family with less than 4 or 5 children is embarrassed. So everyone tries to have a big number of sons to compensate for any potential loss in cases of martyrdom or imprisonment. This way, parents have alternative sons to depend on in the future. In Gaza, the number of males exceeds that of females. Allah gave us more sons than daughters. However, we don't discriminate between men or women. Both struggle in Gaza against the Israelis.
We have 10 children. Each one of them has from 10 to 15 children. We are too many. Thanks Allah, we're satisfied. I pray to Allah to increase Prophet Muhammad's nation so they can struggle against the Israeli occupation.
As you know, the struggle between us and the Israeli occupation has continued since 1948 and even before. My grandfather fell as a martyr in 1947, the days of the rebels. Life goes on. If reproduction had not been continuous, the Palestinian people would have become extinct. We reproduce more because citizens are killed by the Israelis regularly. Thanks Allah, we have our own sons who will inherit the land. Look at this land. No plants grow here since it was targeted by white phosphorus missiles in 2008. We tried to plant the land once and twice in vain.
This is the case that resulted from the ongoing struggle. Everyone's ready to be the next martyr in the battle of freeing the land from the Israeli occupation. Therefore, most of the people here try to reproduce more babies. Even those who have few children feel embarrassed when being asked about the number of their children.
I have 3 sons and 3 daughters. Frankly speaking, I am embarrassed to talk about this. I hope I have more and more children, but this is the will of Allah.
So you feel embarrassed when someone asks about the number of your children?
Of course. I have a secret wish to have at least 5 sons, but it is really the will of Allah. In fact, Allah has given me 7 children. I wish I had more children, but some reasons, like age, work, life, etc., did not allow me to do so.
Someday I went to the hospital. The doctor asked me about the number of my children. I told her I have 5. She told me, "Just 5? You're a wise woman." For me, it is the first time to treat a woman who has only 5 children. I told her that I don't like to have many children. I followed the birth control method in the beginning of my marriage. The doctor told me that she met about 20 cases whose children were 15 at the minimum.
What if someone needs his children?
Some people who are in need to their children's assistance raise their children on a base that when they grow up, they can look after and support the parents. Other people who are not in need to their children's assistance raise and educate them and let them depend on themselves. We ourselves are in need to our children's assistance.
Hamad Dola is one of the Palestinian families who depend mainly on their sons in getting their living. In Dola's case, the eldest son is the breadwinner of the family. He was injured at work. The injury paralyzed him. Now, he is being treated at the hospital so he could hopefully move his legs.
This is the life of the refugee camp. His wife's pregnant, and he has just begun his life. But now he suffers from paralysis for the sake of getting his living.
When he grew up, my son told me that he wanted to marry. I told him that I could not afford the expense of marriage. He said he could borrow some money and return the amount 5 months after the wedding. He got married and began working with someone who owns an excavator. In the work, while they were picking up sand, he was injured. Now he is being treated in the hospital for paralysis. Now it is he who needs others' assistance.
The Palestinians believe in an idea that increasing their population is a form of resistance against the occupation and will be useful for a promising day when they will return to the land of Palestine.
I follow my grandfather. I am going to make a new family and have a new house, despite the blockade and the occupation. Thanks Allah, everything is going well with me. God willing, I hope he will have 20 children. Thanks Allah, we have many properties, so living expenses are available to all of the family. The power of population is a belief to the Palestinian people. They believe that they have been brought to life to protect their land and achieve their historical right of return. These rights run in the blood of Palestinians. Overpopulation is increasing day by day. If it increases more, the population bomb will explode and affect the entire region, not only the Israeli population. The Israeli occupation thinks that the population of the Palestinians began to exceed the population of the Israelis in historical Palestine. So they are afraid of the population bomb, which means to them that when Palestinians become more than Israelis, it will be the beginning of the removal of the Israeli occupation of Palestine occupied in 1948.
The Israeli occupation believes that the more the Palestinian population increases, the more demographic balance on the ground becomes in the interest of the Palestinians. Therefore, the Israeli side does great efforts and uses all the means to kill the Palestinians and bring the land of Palestine to Israel and its settlers. But the Palestinians struggle and lie in ambush, insisting on their right to return to their homeland in preference to becoming kings away from it.
Our God created us on this land. The roots of us and our ancestors lay deep within it. We advise our children to keep the entire land of Palestine for all the Palestinians. Thus, they must free their lands and return to their villages and cities. The more the Palestinians' population increases, the more fighters and martyrs they have. This way, the Israeli occupation will face an imminent demise, which seems very soon, God willing.
إلى قرب زوال اللي هي دولة إسرائيل التي سوف تكون قريبا إن شاء الله
We are now close to the border between Beit Lahia and Herbia. Can you see Herbia from here? All those lands belong to us. There is the vineyard of your grandfather. It will be yours in the future. The Israeli occupation established a military base on it to shoot anyone coming close to the lands from which he was transferred. The Zionist enemy tries as much as it can to evacuate Palestinians living at the edges of the Gaza Strip. The Israelis tried to limit the Palestinians to certain populated area in Gaza City or in some other cities and refugee camps, but they failed. People used to live along the borders in a way to counter the Israeli attempt. In contrast, the Israelis practiced destroying their houses and removing the trees to tighten the siege against Palestinians using artillery and aircrafts. The Palestinians continue their sacrifices to get back their lands and homes.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In Britain, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is under pressure to sack Home Secretary Suella Braverman after she defied Downing Street by publishing an article accusing the Metropolitan Police of bias over protests in support of Palestine. The Home Secretary's allies claim over 50 MPs are backing Suella Braverman, but moderate Tories say the Prime Minister Rishi Sunak must take action. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is facing a civil war in the Conservative Party over the future of the Home Secretary, as he held off sacking her for saying police were biased for allowing a pro-Palestine march on Armistice Day. Before what is expected to be one of Britain's biggest ever days of mass protests on Saturday, 11th of November, allies of Suella Braverman claimed more than 50 Tory MPs were fighting to help her keep her job. Some of the MPs from hard-right Tory groups, labelled the Five Families, are also blaming the chief whip, Simon Hart, for orchestrating a plot to get rid of her. On the other side, moderate Tory MPs are furious with Suella Braverman for stoking tensions before the pro-Palestinian protest and are pressing No. 10 Downing Street and the chief whip to sack her, saying failure to act looks like weakness. Prime Minister Sunak is considering Braverman's future as Home Secretary after she defied Downing Street by submitting the controversial piece to the Times newspaper without making changes it requested. The Home Secretary has kept silent since then, but on Friday met Sir Mark Rowley, the Metropolitan Commissioner, and issued a statement of support for the police in an apparent attempt to calm the furore and stay in post. A source close to Suella Braverman said the commissioner outlined plans to continue working to maintain public order, ensure compliance with the law, and maintain the safety of participants, police officers, and the general public. The Home Secretary emphasized her full backing for the police in what will be a complex and challenging situation and expressed confidence that any criminality will be dealt with robustly. Since the start of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict on 7th of October, there have been a series of marches in London and around Britain of up to 100,000 demonstrators. The protesters have been calling for a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip, with Palestinian officials saying more than 10,000 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza so far. The marches have already been peaceful, but there have been some arrests for inciting racial hatred. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak also said he had been assured by the police that they were taking all steps to ensure remembrance services are safeguarded from any protests. Prime Minister Sunak added, "It is because of those who fought for this country and for the freedom we cherish that those who wish to protest can do so, but they must do so respectfully and peacefully." The Prime Minister's spokesperson said on Friday that an ongoing internal process within No. 10 Downing Street was taking place and that there were no updates on what may happen to Suella Braverman. Whitehall sources suggested that Rishi Sunak could take the decision on her future next week. However, Tory moderates expressed anger that Prime Minister Sunak had not acted decisively against the Home Secretary, who has also departed from the government policy in recent weeks by trying to ban charities from giving tents to the homeless and describing pro-Palestinian protests as hate marches. The Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, refused to express confidence in Suella Braverman on Friday, along with Robert Halfen, a senior minister who said it was a decision for No. 10 Downing Street. Over the last 2 days, One Nation Conservative MPs have privately expressed their discontent at Braverman's behaviour to the Chief Whip, with several sources saying they had rarely seen such anger within the moderate wing of the Conservative Party. One centrist former minister said they assumed that Braverman would be removed within weeks in a reshuffle unless she quit first. "As a party, our message on immigration and crime is strong, but the messenger has become toxic," they said. "The only question now is whether Suella Braverman decides to resign in protest before she is sacked." Senior MPs in the Tory party also criticised the attempts to block the pro-Palestinian protesters on Armistice Day and Remembrance Sunday. David Davis, a former Brexit secretary and advocate for civil liberties, said, "The cenotaph is not an exercise in sentimentality, but remembrance and what those wars were fought over, the right to protest, the right to freedom of speech. I'm used to Home Secretaries behaving with a little more gravitas. It's not just an exercise of taste, it's an exercise in necessity of the job. They behave above the fray as best they can because that does not inflame or flare up things that could go through perfectly peacefully." David Lidington, a Conservative former de facto Deputy Prime Minister and a former MP, also warned against the idea that ministers should be able to ban protests in advance. "Those, including some of my former colleagues, arguing or implying that ministers should be able to ban demonstrations might reflect whether they would be happy to see such powers exercised by a left-wing government." In defence of Home Secretary Suella Braverman, an ally of the Home Secretary said at least 52 MPs from five families of hard-right Tory groupings had promised to stand by her if No. 10 Downing Street attempts to sack her for defying Sunak. A source close to the group said two of the MPs were on the government payroll and were threatening to resign if Suella Braverman is sacked. Some have said they will write letters to Sir Graham Brady calling for a vote of no confidence in the Prime Minister if Suella Braverman is removed. Britain's Sky News has also covered the same story and tells us more. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is under pressure to sack Home Secretary Suella Braverman after she defied No. 10 Downing Street by publishing an article accusing the Metropolitan Police of bias over protests in support of Palestine. The Home Secretary Suella Braverman has come under fire for making controversial statements about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and pro-Palestinian protesters in the United Kingdom. In The Times newspaper, she described pro-Palestinian protesters as hate marchers. She also likened the protests to scenes from the past in Northern Ireland, prompting politicians there to accuse her of deliberately stoking divisions. Suella Braverman has also publicly slated the Metropolitan Police, which is allowing a pro-Palestinian march to go ahead on Armistice Day. She said the Metropolitan Police Force was guilty of double standards and favouring left-wing protesters over those on the right of politics. Part 1.
Let's talk about Dimona. Many people say, well, nobody knows.
You see, I blush, you say Dimona and I blush. We're not supposed to talk about Dimona. But why? Go ahead. Because it's a taboo. It's a taboo, it's a secret.
Negev Desert, south of Israel. This mysterious complex, away from the public eye, employs thousands of people, all sworn to secrecy. When its existence was discovered, Israel said it was a textile factory, never admitting its true purpose, making plutonium for atomic bombs. We need answers, and we go to meet one of the few people in Israel that knows what is going on inside Dimona.
We are dealing with this element of weapons of mass destruction, meaning nuclear, chemical and biological. We're the only NGO dealing with this right now in Israel. When you believe that these are the weapons that keeps you safe, when this is the common belief, then the question raised, are we the next country to use them? Israel is a nuclear armed state, chemical armed state, and biological armed state. Nuclear weapon is not a weapon that aimed at an army. It's a weapon that destroys a city. Are we willing to destroy any city in the Middle East? Mothers, children, fathers, citizens, not soldiers.
Want to know more about the most secretive nuclear program in the world?
Just transmitted at the request of the...
Is the Israeli nuclear plant at Dimona poisoning and threatening the lives of millions throughout the Middle East? From Tel Aviv, we go south. Our destination, Dimona.
It is too far, you know? Can you get closer, please?
approaching a nuclear plant is a high risk. The highway splices through the heat and sand of the Negev Desert. A barbed wire fence edges the road. Signs posted every few hundred meters warn drivers not to stop their vehicles under any circumstances.
They have cameras, they will see.
This is a military zone. Finally, we can have a distant look at one of the world's most secret facilities. An exclusive